It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in with Democratic Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin as Congress returns from August recess with an agenda that includes disagreements over spending levels. And there's room for your voice in this discussion about national politics. Call in with a question. Bring your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mark Pocan represents the 2nd Congressional District, including Madison, Reedsburg, and Dodgeville. Representative Pocan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So Congress must pass a dozen spending bills to fund agencies before the end of September or face a government shutdown. How likely is a federal government shutdown?
Oh, boy. with the current Republican majority, I don't know how to answer that question. Normally the appropriations process isn't this messed up. During the Trump presidency, we still had people on appropriations, the committee that I serve on that do the budget bills, were people who still were rational, I guess is the best way to say it, to get things done. So, you know, there's a saying that there's Democrats, Republicans, and appropriators. The problem is when Kevin McCarthy became Speaker, part of the deal he cut in order to become Speaker was he put some of the more extremist members onto the committee, and, you know, they just didn't do their job this time for the first time ever. When Democrats and Republicans were in charge under Trump, we did our job. This is the first time we didn't. So we still haven't gotten two bills out of committee. We've only passed one on the floor with 11 legislative days to get everything done. It's unlikely that'll happen. So the only way you won't have a shutdown is if we pass a continuing resolution until some date in the future in order to give us more time to do that. And unfortunately, the Republicans have said they'll only do that with their own votes. So they have to convince their own members. And some members want to start an impeachment process against President Biden. Some want additional funding at the border and all sorts of other things. And even Kevin McCarthy is trying to tell them, you know, if we don't have a continuing resolution and we shut down government, that shut down your investigations into Hunter Biden and things that some of them really enjoy doing. But it's impossible to kind of predict because that caucus is so incredibly dysfunctional. So I'm going back today, assuming that we're going to take up the defense bill this week. But if we take up one bill this week and we have two more weeks then to do 10 more bills, as well as a farm bill, as well as a FAA reauthorization, all of those things that are due by September 30th, that's next to impossible.
Mm. You talk about the House Freedom Caucus, hardline conservatives, and, you know, seeking to cut spending for fiscal year 2024 by about $120 billion, less than what President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy had agreed to in May, and that's according to Reuters. Is that spending level achievable? Is it realistic?
Well, and that's the point, is they had an agreement with the debt ceiling that we all went through that actually downgraded the United States' financial condition and makes us pay more for our debt. And they broke it 2 weeks later because, again, of the extremists. They probably have about 40 folks in their caucus that don't function like the other, 395 members of the House. And because of that, we didn't do what we normally would do. You want to have a House position going into the budget, a Senate position, and then there's a committee that works from there. But if we don't pass those bills through the House, as Kevin McCarthy has told his own caucus, we have less negotiating stance. So the Senate budget would be in a much better position than the House budget, but they don't care. So by marking everything to 22 levels that was in violation of the agreement, and then throwing in a bunch of riders around abortion and pride flags and diversity, equity, and inclusion that are going nowhere, but it's the only way they think they can pass a bill. I mean, we haven't even gotten close to doing the job that the House needs to on the budget side. So it's not just the financial, the number levels that are unrealistic. It's the entire process, the entire product that's unrealistic.
Could McCarthy try to build a coalition of House Republicans and House Democrats to get the numbers he needs to pass the bill without conservatives? What is that calculus like?
He could, but then already Matt Gaetz from Florida and others have said they'll remove him as speaker, which is crazy, right? So the House of Representatives, they don't see us as a House of Representatives of Democrats and Republicans. They see us only as their own party, again, which is not productive and not helpful. So because of that, if he comes and gets votes like John Boehner did previously when he was speaker, or mm-hmm. Paul Ryan, he was speaker, then he'll get in trouble and perhaps lose his spot. And since you saw that week when we elected him speaker and how much he gave away to become speaker, you know, it seems that he cares more about speaker than anything. It's less likely that that will happen. Although if it was just a clean continuing resolution just to keep government open and give them more time to do the job they've had months and months and months to do, we would do that. I think it's just a matter of, I don't think he can do it because of the situation he put himself in with his caucus.
Talking with Democratic Representative Mark Pocan, represents South Central Wisconsin in Congress and looking at the fall ahead for the House and Congress. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Turning to the Farm Bill legislation renewed roughly every 5 years, expires this year, and funds programs, as you know, related to agriculture and nutrition. How would you like to see the Farm Bill address the needs of farmers in Wisconsin?
Well, one, we should do the Farm Bill in a timely way, which, as I just mentioned, I don't think is going to happen because technically the current Farm Bill expires September 30th. If we get it done by the end of the year, it's still fine. We have to renew a few programs through some sort of a continuing resolution. But by January 1st, if you don't, there's some real bad ramifications that can happen for Wisconsin, especially around dairy pricing. So we kind of have to get it done. And you'd think this could be maybe less partisan, but not with this Congress. It's not. So we haven't seen language from either the House or Senate on a farm bill, which could be expected, right? Because we don't have to do it until the end of the month. I just don't see that happening in the House anyway. And again, I think hopefully the more extreme elements of the Republican caucus will allow some sort of a continuing resolution so we have more time to get it done. And to be fair, Congress seems to do everything on deadline, so that wouldn't be unreasonable. It's just so hard to predict their caucus. If for some reason they don't do that, again, we're probably all right until the end of the year. But at that point, old law around dairy pricing, milk pricing in particular, will come back. And that would devastate dairy farmers in Wisconsin.
By far, the sticking point, the largest expenditure in the Farm Bill is SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program for low-income households. You strongly oppose cuts to these programs. Talk about that sticking point in this bill and why you oppose these cuts.
Well, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is probably the number one program in this country that keeps kids out of poverty, keeps them from going hungry. And it's about, and it changes, and it changed with COVID as well, but about $40 a week per person. Nothing, it's not an amount that keeps you from working, which is the, I think, rather ignorant argument that some have put out there, because it's such a small amount, but it is enough that it provides food assistance to those who truly are poor, to help feed them. And that's the only thing the money can be used for. My freshman term, I lived on SNAP for a week. And I'll tell you, it's not fun. Back then it was, I think, $32 or $31 a week. And I bought a bag of oranges, and that was like 20% of my budget. Mm-hmm. And you know, you look at the types of food you can buy for that, it's not much. And to think that that somehow is keeping people from working is an absolutely ridiculous argument. But that's the argument that some in the Republican House caucus have made. And that's why that's a sticking point for the Farm Bill. And I would hate to see that hold everything up just because some people would rather play politics than do something that's, I think, essential for this country in having a farm bill.
Mark Pocan, Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, as we take a look ahead at the fall agenda on Capitol Hill, where to find disagreements and bipartisan support with spending bills in the works. Call in to field a question, share your comments along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Congress returns from its summer recess with a full slate of legislative priorities, appropriation bills. We get a preview of what to expect this fall in Capitol Hill with Democratic Representative Mark Pocan of Wisconsin. And you can share what's on your mind. Call in with a question, add your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Turning to Afghan refugees. A little over 2 years ago, Afghan refugees started arriving in Wisconsin. And in the past, you supported bills providing clear pathways to permanent status or expanding the number of special immigrant visas. Do you support similar measures today?
Yes. I mean, part of the problem is this is a slow process on the United States side. And part of our problem, and it relates back to the budget, when you take spending levels and go to the 22 levels, like we just talked about through the appropriations process, that's, if you just did it as across the board cut, just to give you an idea, that's a 22% cut across the board. We already don't have enough staffing to process these applications, which is a problem, and much less if you cut that further back. So what we need to do, one, is have an actual immigration policy, which we're not close to in this country because of the political polarization of the issue. But two, we do have to have enough funding to have people to process these applications, because we owe it to the people who helped us while we were in Afghanistan to be able to process these in a quicker way. If not, in some cases, people and their families are at risk from the Taliban. So it's a very unfortunate situation, possibly going to be getting worse if we don't do our jobs around the appropriations process, which is why, I've always been active, whether it be appropriations or in the state legislature, the Joint Committee on Finance. You know, where you put your money is really where you put your values. And if we don't fund these positions, we're not treating the people well who helped our country.
Turning to former President Trump, facing criminal charges in four separate cases, what is your reaction to the indictments?
Well, I'm glad to see that actually some justice may be being served, because I, for a while, was a bit skeptical myself, thinking that, he's going to get away with it, that we don't, look at former presidents in the way that maybe you should look at everyone in this country equally under the legal system. But the fact that this has occurred, clearly there were things that many of us saw that we thought were illegal. But again, I think just like Donald Trump thought he'd get away with it, we're finding that that's not going to happen. And that's good, because I think that does show that you can have a democracy where everyone is treated equally under the law. And that's what Donald Trump is facing. And he now can make a case if he claims he's innocent. If a jury finds him guilty, then he'll be guilty of these many charges that are against him. But, he always operated in a way that was a little fast and loose for how I think we looked at politics and how we looked at public service. And, if someone breaks the law, it doesn't matter who you are, you should be held accountable, even former presidents.
Brian called from Sturgeon Bay, and Brian is wondering who is pressing for the impeachment of President Trump and why. Brian feels it's a distraction because Trump will have a series of trials as he runs again for the White House. Can you respond to that?
So you're saying the impeachment of Biden?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not sure whether it's Brian is referencing the Republicans seeking to impeach President Biden, which we can also talk about here. But, first of all, with Trump, if you have a series of trials as you're campaigning, how could that affect the campaign for president?
Well, I mean, I guess, if he's not on the campaign trail. But there could be a lot of things that put people not on the campaign trail, from fundraising to, in this case, legal actions that they have to appear before the court for. Although I think there are many ways to delay legal actions as well. So it probably won't be as in the totality as people are thinking. The good news is that so far the legal system in multiple areas has said no one is above the law. And now you have to let that process happen. But you shouldn't be able to just avoid prosecution because you're running for some kind of an office. You have to be held accountable like everyone else. And I guess that's what I'm glad to see, is that there's no special treatment. This is happening in a way that if anyone broke the law or is accused of breaking the law, they would be treated. And I think that's good for a democracy.
Now to House Republicans, who are threatening to launch an official impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden, partially based on his son's past business in foreign countries like Ukraine, and that's according to CNN. How concerned are you about a potential impeachment inquiry?
Well, I can almost guarantee there'll be an impeachment inquiry, because Kevin McCarthy's got enough of his members who said if he doesn't do it, they won't avoid a government shutdown by September 30th. So, you know, starting one doesn't mean a whole lot. If they actually try to do an impeachment, they're going to have to try to make a case, which they're not even close to be able to do that. But I think there's almost 100% certitude that we will have some sort of impeachment inquiry begin, because it's the only way Kevin McCarthy is going to be able to move forward, because some of his people, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, by the way, just yesterday talked about a succession of states from this country again. I think she has said some of the most dangerous things that are worthy of censure. And it's something I've got to talk to some of my colleagues when we get back. But it's those extremists that are pushing this. And when you only have a 5-seat majority like Kevin McCarthy has, or actually 4, because someone's now gone, it's the tail wagging the dog. Any handful of members can speak for that caucus, because they can hold the caucus up.
We have Democratic Representative Mark Pocan, represents South Central Wisconsin in Congress, as we look at the fall agenda on Capitol Hill. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Turning to Wisconsin, where Republicans are threatening to impeach newly elected Justice Janet Protasiewicz from the state Supreme Court. Republicans say Protasiewicz can't be impartial on cases involving the redrawing of election map cases because she called the current maps, quote, rigged during her campaign. Has Justice Protasiewicz violated a code of conduct?
I think the violation of a code of conduct is coming from the Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature who are recommending this idiotic idea. And the reason I say it's idiotic is for this reason. If the legislature, any time they don't like a pending case before the Supreme Court, can find any reason to say they're going to impeach a justice, and that would hold up the court from being able to act, or at least that justice in a small body from being able to act, that's not what that process is intended for. Impeachment is very specific in statute for wrongdoing, and this doesn't match anywhere near that. In fact, all she said was what is rather obvious from the math, that, you know, when 54% of the people vote for a Democrat for state assembly, you get 36 of the 99 seats with that vote. Clearly, there's an imbalance, and that is a rigged set of maps. But she never talked about the process and said that the legislature, whether or not they had the ability to do those rigged maps. The bottom line, though, is if the legislature makes this their new standard, they can hold any Supreme Court justice liable for anything and hold up the entire court. And that is not a separation of powers. This is just an attempt to keep the maps that are rigged in place, as well as keep the abortion law that's from 1849 in place, and as well as do whatever they want to. They're acting as though they're above the court, not a co-equal branch. And this would be a very, very dangerous move if they do this. If they do this, I predict there'll be many repercussions that happen from the people of Wisconsin. The people voted in a big way for Janet Protasiewicz. She hasn't even had a case before her yet. And to say that you're going to impeach a judge who hasn't had a case before them is beyond ridiculous.
What I'm hearing from you is that impeaching her would nullify an election.
It would nullify an election, but also it would nullify a separation of powers, because you're saying that the legislature at any time could threaten impeachment on any judge for any decision pending that they think they don't like. And that's not what the impeachment process is used for. It's very specific in statute. It's there for wrongdoing, not for politics. And if they go this route, there will be huge ramifications. So I hope that even, people who may not agree with Janet Protasiewicz on where they think her she's going to be on issues would realize how dangerous this could be abused by either party in the future if they go down this. And that's the bottom line. It's not about one idiot or
Representative
another.
Pocan, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thank you.
Mark Pocan, Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Up ahead, why Generation Z doesn't like to show their feet. A journalist explains what the internet is buzzing about. But first, Wisconsin's long-term care providers are facing persistent staffing shortages and revenue challenges. As Joe Schultz reports, it comes as more baby boomers near retirement age.
In late January, Ann Mara learned that her mother would need to find a new place to live.
It was in the middle of winter. Mom is on hospice, and she's 91 years old with dementia, and they're evicting her. It was just disgusting to us.
Her mom had lived in the Emerald Bay retirement community for roughly 5 years. Now, the Brown County facility was telling residents it would no longer accept Medicaid funding for residents like Mara's mother, Shirley Holtz. In a letter, the facility said it wasn't getting enough government funding to pay rising labor costs. Holtz moved out of Emerald Bay in March. Her health started to fail almost immediately.
She had lost like 15, 20 pounds in 10 days that I was gone. And she had stopped eating, stopped drinking, and she wasn't responsive when I got there. And then she passed away.
Holtz died in April, and Mara believes the move played a role. But she isn't the only Wisconsinite who's had to move a loved one from a long-term care facility in recent years. Nearly two dozen nursing homes have closed across the state since 2020. That's according to Leading Age Wisconsin, a senior living advocacy group. While long-term care facilities deal with Medicaid reimbursement that's lower than the cost of care, they also face a labor shortage that providers call a caregiver crisis. Jim Orheim is Leading Age Wisconsin's president. He says staffing shortages got worse during the COVID-19 pandemic.
We saw a lot of really seasoned staff retire. And we saw an insufficient pipeline of new talent moving into these roles. At the same time, we continue to see the aging population growing. That's going to continue to put stress on the system.
As of March 2022, 51% of nursing facilities in Wisconsin reported staffing shortages. That's according to nonprofit health policy organization KFF. There's evidence that the caregiver shortage has led to worse care for patients. Last year, the state received more complaints about nursing homes and assisted living facilities than it had since at least 2018. Matthew Bowler is a Madison attorney who takes on elder abuse and neglect cases. He says his firm has seen an increase in cases over the last year and a half.
That is a result of obviously poor care, but also it certainly does relate to understaffing.
Advocates say the recent state budget increases Medicaid reimbursement and funds initiatives aimed at addressing the caregiver crisis. They are also working with the state to develop a program that would ensure inflationary increases to reimbursement. The challenges facing long-term care facilities have been especially felt in Lincoln County, where Pinecrest Nursing Home lost over $9 million since 2014. The Lincoln County Board is now considering selling the nursing home, which it's owned since the 1950s.
That's the order, so nay.
In late June, about two dozen residents gathered at a county building to protest the possible sale. They're afraid it would mean fewer beds for lower-income residents who rely on Medicaid. For Reverend Michael Southcombe, selling the home is not the answer.
To believe that someone will buy Pinecrest, either a nonprofit or a for-profit entity, and keep the same level of service with 70 to 80% of the residents on Medicaid is magical thinking.
Yes.
The protesters turned in a petition with more than 600 signatures asking the county not to sell. Lincoln County hasn't made a final decision, but last month, the board considered authorizing a referendum that would have granted Pinecrest an extra $3 million per year. The county board voted down that proposal 9-13. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On the internet, it seems, Generation Z takes a strong stance against exposing toes. Gen Z, made up of mostly people in their teens and early 20s. Here are millennial TikTok users probing this.
Gen Z, what is the deal with you guys and feet?
Millennial grandma moment here. I got a question for Gen Z.
Are you wearing socks and tennis shoes all summer long?
Are you? Call in with a question. Share comments as we discuss feet. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Talia Argos is a writer for HuffPost covering style. Talia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. You, as a millennial, how do you feel about Generation Z hiding their feet in public?
Well, I thought it was very interesting when I first heard about it. A friend of mine, her sister is a teacher, and mentioned to me that Gen Z or her students are not showing their bare feet, and I just thought it was fascinating, and I had to find out why.
So, as you looked into this, Generation Z, mostly in their teens and early 20s, why is this generation against wearing shoes like flip-flops in public?
Well, it's interesting. They come at it from a few different angles. One is that Gen Z is in a unique position as the first generation to have internet access from early childhood, which means they're kind of aware of everything all the time that's out there. And it also means they're uniquely aware of who's watching them, and with that, how they're dressed online and out in the real world. Gen Z has kind of identified the foot fetish community, which has a huge online presence through sites like Feet Finder and WikiFeet, as having the potential to objectify or exploit them through their social media photos of their feet, or even when they're wearing sandals out on the street. And, you know, that notion can make some people uncomfortable, especially young people who are largely still navigating their sense of self and how that's reflected in their online presence. I spoke with a psychologist in Texas who's been counseling members of Gen Z for the last 11 years, and her feeling was that hiding their feet and not showing them in public or in photos is a way for Gen Z to protect their personal boundaries and maintain a sense of control over how they're perceived online, maybe specifically from this community.
You know, as you say, this generation has grown up on the internet. And I wonder if you can make that connection there. Are young people today more aware of the potential for exploitation and objectification because of, you know, having really been a part of social media all their lives and the internet?
Definitely. Absolutely. And that's something that Dr. Smith talked about a lot when I spoke with her.
You also spoke with a California high school teacher to learn more about Gen Z foot culture. And here is Andrea Michelle on TikTok explaining what she hears from students.
I asked Gen Z why I have to wear shoes that cover my feet all the time now. It apparently all comes down to this man right here. That's Dan Schneider. He made lots of Nickelodeon shows, including iCarly. And apparently there's a lot of foot humor in those. And you're thinking, okay, it's just feet.
Talia, pick up the story here. 2007, Dan Schneider creates the Nickelodeon TV show iCarly. The show ends in 2012. What does Schneider have as a role in foot culture?
Well, I think it just goes back to this being something that made its way through social media. And it just adds to one of the many ways that Gen Z is aware of foot fetishes being a thing and people in the online community who are in the foot fetish community perhaps are looking at content that was not created to be foot fetish content, but for example, you know, just a photo of a group of friends and they happen to be wearing sandals. And the idea is that someone, you know, once the content is in the possession of the user, to them, it's whatever they want it to be. And I think that that just helped Gen Z, you know, with this idea that your photos are out there and whoever receives them can use them in whichever way they so choose. And Gen Z has decided that they want to maintain more of a boundary over that.
You write about how there is a literal and figurative cost for open toes. Can you describe a bit more what that means?
Yes. So again, back to these sites, Deep Finder and OnlyFans is another one. You know, OnlyFans is a subscription service primarily used for pornography, but foot fetish content is also very profitable there. So a common chide said by Gen Z when they see people's bare feet is no free feet, which means that they have this strong awareness that the sight of feet are actually a monetizable commodity. And why would you give that away for free when hypothetically you can use that to turn a profit? Gen Z in general is uniquely aware of how to monetize their digital footprint. So, you know, it's just natural, I think, that this would be a thought and a belief amongst them.
Digital footprint there. Okay. Talia Ergas, writer for HuffPost, our guide to Generation Z, taking a strong dislike of showing feet and what's behind it. There's room for your thoughts along the way. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Generation Z, mostly in their teens and early 20s, we explore the intense feelings that some people in this generation have about showing their feet. Captured here in a compilation of Gen X TikTok users addressing closed shoes.
I'm a Gen Z teacher, so I'm conditioned to hating toes and hating feet.
We're the ones saying no to everything that the older generations have been saying yes to for years.
Why do I go to shop for shoes and they're all open toe?
Weigh in on feet. Call in with a question or comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Talia Ergas, who covers style and beauty at HuffPost. Talia, you talked about websites like feetfinder.com, and they allow people to sell or buy custom foot photos. Are Gen Z members being asked for pictures of their feet?
Yes, definitely. I spoke with a Gen Z fashion and lifestyle influencer who, you know, she posts a lot of style content, and she shared with me that should she post a photo in which she's wearing sandals and her bare feet are visible through those sandals, she said she gets inundated with direct messages of complete strangers asking her to send them more foot photos, you know, and this is someone with a public profile and a large following, but this is definitely something that she said that people in her generation experience.
Why could public figures be at risk of having a foot photo taken and sold? What is the marketplace like?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, because there's WikiFeet. You mentioned, you know, a public person on WikiFeet. Strangers can just take your publicly available photos if you are a public figure and curate a feed specifically of photos showing your feet. This happened to a musician and stylist I spoke with. She was Googling herself one day, and she stumbled upon a WikiFeet page that someone had curated for her. and she has no idea who, and it was just every publicly available photo of her in which her feet happened to appear.
What is the recourse there? What do you do about that?
Well, I mean, if you're a public person, I'm not sure if there is much to do about that. And, you know, the stylist that I spoke with who this happened to, thankfully for her, she wasn't offended by it. She felt it was innocent. And, you know, she saw the humor in the situation. She joked with me that she wished she had taken the opportunity to monetize her feed on a different site, you know, while she had the opportunity. But you can clearly see how someone else, and certainly someone younger who is still navigating their sense of self, might not find something like this as innocent and, you know, might be offended by it or might feel like their privacy and their space has been invaded. So, you know, it really depends on the person. And there's a wide number of ways someone could react. And, you know, you can empathize with all ends of the spectrum there.
And earlier we heard a TikTok user say, I'm Gen Z, I'm conditioned to hating toes and hating feet. How is social media influencing these feelings?
Yeah, well, social media is a constant narrative of what should be in quotes, of course. So, you know, Gen Z is getting this on social media from all angles. They're getting the jokes of no free feet, reminding them that feet are a monetizable commodity on the internet. They're also seeing videos, they call them dog attack videos. Gen Z calls toes dogs.
Uh-huh.
So a dog attack is basically someone touching someone else with their bare feet against their will. And of course it's a joke, but again, it just reinforces this idea that, you know, bare feet are something to be taken aback by. And then we also see just the pure fashion of it in people wearing sneakers with socks, putting socks in their under their sandals. And, you know, just that's another way it's propagated on social media. It's just people seeing the trends and absorbing the trends just like they would any other trend.
Well, you know, I'm Gen X, and I would say my dogs get tired, literally, because I'm older. You know, how are older generations responding to this?
Well, I mean, one thing that I thought was interesting is the stylist I spoke with, she said that she's seen a trend mostly in her bridal clients, which are largely of the millennial generation. And she said where formal sandals used to be a much more requested item for weddings, now she's seeing a lot of her bridal clients preferring closed-toed pumps. So I do see that as one way that it's kind of trickling to the generations above, the idea that, you know, perhaps feet are not elegant and perhaps some people prefer them to be covered in photos that they're going to look at for many years to come. But I think outside of that, everyone I spoke with largely feels like this is a trend that's largely contained to Gen Z, and a lot of millennials and a lot of Gen Xers are still proudly bearing their toes in public. I can say I'm one of them.
We're talking about Gen Z opting to hide their feet and why. We have writer Talia Aragas, who is a writer for HuffPost and is our guide to this. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. You mentioned closed-toe pumps. What type of shoes, then, is Gen Z more likely to wear?
Yeah, I mean, Gen Z is a big fan of socks with everything. So they're still wearing a lot of the same shoes that other generations are wearing, but rather than wearing their slides or their sandals with their feet showing, they're putting socks on first. Another big one is wearing Crocs with socks, and they've kind of embraced sneakers as footwear for all scenarios, from the casual all the way up to the formal, you know, pairing sneakers with a dress or a suit for a formal event. And Gen Z has a very casual aesthetic overall. So this footwear choice kind of fits right in.
How might the fashion industry respond? Could this make an impact?
I definitely think it could. I mean, you know, just in terms of what type of footwear is out there and what's available. And this summer, we actually saw socks with sandals becoming a big trend outside of Gen Z. And I think that could definitely be connected as a way that, you know, perhaps Gen Z was making this style choice for one reason or a collection of reasons. And that has kind of trickled out. And now people are looking at it and saying, huh, you know, a little high heel sandal with a lacy sock is kind of cute.
I wonder, could Gen Z's aversion here alter what footwear is sold by retailers? Like, could this affect what even comes down the runway?
I mean, you know, it's tough to say, really. And again, while there is, there's definitely a strong stance taken by a lot of people in Gen Z to not bare their toes, there's still a lot of people in Gen Z who feel comfortable with it, and there's still the other generations who feel comfortable with it. So it's impossible to say, really, but, you know, it doesn't seem like as a society as a whole, we've decided not to show our bare feet.
And so, Talia, as we wrap up here in our final moments together, what are you watching for from Gen Z and in terms of their issues with feet? What could be next stages to watch for here?
You know, it's interesting to think about. It's impossible to say, really, but I think what we can take from this and what's definitely going to continue is Gen Z's awareness of how style choices are perceived by others on social media, on the larger internet, and in the real world, and making style choices based off of that awareness. Gen Z has proven to be a very conscious generation in a variety of ways, and their fashion choices are no different. So that will definitely continue.
Talia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Talia Ergas is a writer for HuffPost covering style, beauty, home, entertainment, and more. We have a link to Talia's piece on Gen Z and feet. It's at WPR.org/mornings. And while you're there, if you have an idea for what the morning show should cover next, please get in touch with us. Email ideas@WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.